But now it's just gone 6:30, and it's time for Opera on Three, and over to Leeds Grand Theatre for Opera North's recent production of Verdi's Un Ballo in Mascara. It's presented by Donald MacLeod.
Opera's stock in trade is love and death. Buckets of blood are routine, but historically the spilling of blue blood on stage has been a rather sensitive issue. I'm sure that it isn't the depiction on stage of the real-life assassination of King Gustav III of Sweden in 1792, which has delayed the first ever production of Verdi's Un Ballo in Mascara, a masked ball by the ever-excellent Opera North, conducted electrifyingly, as one critic put it, by the company's former music director, Richard Farnes. What we have for you tonight, beyond the, spoiler alert, royal bloodletting, is a classic operatic tale of fatal passions, power and plotting in a new production for Opera North by Tim Albury. In the role of the fatally destined King Gustavo is the Mexican tenor Rafael Rojas, familiar to Opera North audiences from his appearances in Andrea Chenier and Turandot. Philip Rhodes sings the role of the king's staunchest ally, Count Ankerström. The Hungarian soprano Adrienne Miksch is his wife. And it's when he discovers the king's having an affair with his wife that Ankerström joins a plot against Gustavo, which culminates in the murderous masked ball that's the climax of Verdi's opera. The fortune teller Ulrika, who foresees this, is Patricia Bardon, and the king's page, Oscar, is unusually for Verdi a trouser role, sung scene-stealingly by Teresa Gevorgian. With the chorus of Opera North, chorus master Oliver Rundell, and the orchestra of Opera North, leader David Greed, conducted by Richard Farnes. Well, with a story that has a king murdered on stage based on the assassination of Gustav III of Sweden at a masked ball in Stockholm in the late 18th century, Verdi had predictable trouble with the censors. A way was found around their objections by relocating the action, somewhat absurdly, to colonial Boston, where Gustavo becomes Ricardo, Earl of Warwick. Tim Albury and the set and costume designer Hannah Clark have restored the original setting to Sweden, certainly in Northern Europe, in the mid-20th century. The look's mostly 1940s, with the courtiers as men in suits, overcoats and Homburg hats, and the setting a large reception room in a palace, all painted in the characteristic Swedish Gustavian grey. Well, I'm delighted to have as my guest this evening here in the Grand Theatre Leeds, Flora Wilson of King's College London, an expert on 19th century opera. Flora, this is a piece with a reputation for presenting a few dramaturgical problems. Does the time shift of Tim Albury's production solve those problems?
Well, I think what Tim Albury's managed to do here is to sort of really take advantage of the fact that actually this opera in some ways doesn't have a correct setting anymore. Such were the journey, in a way, that it took on its way to the stage for its own premiere. And he's really run with that. So what we've got is this very sort of neutral-looking setting, which I think is supposed to be the palace at Drottningholm, the actual historical setting, the home of the King of Sweden that this opera is nominally about. I think that works very nicely, above all, as a sort of neutral backdrop for then the passions, the interactions, the relationships between the characters, which is what really brings this piece to life.
One of the things that the critics have been universal in their praise of is what we're hearing from the pit. This is the first time that Richard Farnes has returned to Opera North since he was music director. And, I mean, they're really going great guns.
Absolutely, and it's a wonderful score. This really is showing off Verdi, or rather Verdi was showing off what he had learned by this point in his career. He'd written those big middle period hits, Traviata, Rigoletto, Trovatore. He'd also, perhaps more importantly in this case, he'd written operas for Paris by this point. He'd been working with the best opera, the most rehearsed opera on the planet, and he'd really taken lessons he'd learned there and put them to good work in his own Italian operas here. And so what we're going to hear this evening is an opera where he's using everything he knows about the orchestra, all the tricks he's learned in orchestration, to really communicate about characters and about atmospheres.
Flora, thanks very much indeed for the time being. We'll be talking again in the interval between Acts 2 and 3. I asked Richard Farnes what it was like coming back to this company he worked with for so long to do this opera.
The wonderful thing about this production is that so many of us have never done the piece before, including myself and Tim Albury, I believe. Quite a large number of the cast and nearly all the chorus and nearly all the orchestra have never played this piece before, which I think makes it very exciting. It means that although a lot of us know each other very well, we can trust each other to make some interesting experimental decisions in rehearsals that we can try out. We're not embarrassed if they don't go right, if we want to change things. The trust that Tim and I have within each other, and the chorus and I and the orchestra and a lot of the singers that I've already worked with and I know, that's really important when you're putting on a big new piece like this for the first time, because it enables you to experiment where you might not.
The conductor, Richard Farnes, already in the pit here at the Grand Theatre Leeds, about to conduct the overture and the first two acts of Verdi's opera Il Ballo in Maschera, A Masked Ball. When the curtain rises, we see Oscar, the King's page, sitting at his master's desk, looking over some papers as the room gradually fills with courtiers. And one by one, Verdi introduces us to all the main players.
Thank you. Thank you. pensier. Signore, oggi vuol riga alla maggior vendita, ma sotto altrove scritto io la sarò
davver, davver
si come sta mia scena
l'idea non è prudente Terra di scarcalluno e di potria,
ma il tema!
Serve di tutto tema, onesto consigliere.
Che tu va pronta un abito da pescatore.
Se la mettete all'abito, la sapra si
tornare. Ogni cura si toglie di letto, e si accorda di matto, dove la folla del tempo le vinto, siamo donne con legge con me.
Thank you.
Ancora te voglio credere, Voi non usate E lui non ti muovere. Mezzanotte. Ah, che veggio! Una testa che sotterra, si leva, sospira.
Oh, Thank you. aspetto l'arma del pacifetato. Lo sangue deve essere grato di ogni destra la raga brandì. Quando c'è la città di una scena, ogni uomo le sa che non vuoi.
Spicca la sua dea,
si precipiti dal cielo all'inferno,
chi farà?
Non è giusto, o fulorino,
non è esso,
ma son io che dinanzi a voi qui sto.
Fondoloni che il sorriso d'una bella stemmo in darmo l'aspettar.
Io per altro il voto almeno con questi sine mirar.
Con un passo
si osate tra che terra
i battate non vi temo.
Il miele sulle rugiate.
me d'aver chiedete, no, e l'altro ancor mi sta, e vi punge,
lo saprete se verrete,
e ci vedrà.
Tragedy has turned to farce, say the conspirators, cheated of their opportunity to assassinate the king in the desolate place they've followed him to, but snorting with derision at seemingly having caught out the king's secretary, Ankerström, and his wife Amelia wearing a hooded cloak that obscures her face on some weird late-night assignation. But before they part, Ankerström, the king's closest friend, arranges a meeting with the conspirators for the following morning. That's how things stand, with Ankerström believing his wife has been unfaithful to him with his most trusted friend at the end of the second act of Verdi's opera Un ballo in maschera, A Masked Ball. In this performance of the new production of the opera by Tim Albury for Opera North, Gustavo is sung by Rafael Rojas. Count Ankerström, Philip Rhodes, Amelia, Adrienne Miksch, Ulrika Arvidsson, Patricia Barden, Oscar, Teresa Gevorgian, Count Ribbing, Dean Robinson, Count Horn, John Savonin, Christian, Richard Mosley Evans, and the chorus and orchestra of Opera North, conducted by Richard Farnes. We'll be hearing the third act of Ballo in Maschera in around 10 minutes' time. Flora Wilson, an expert on 19th century opera, is here with me in the Grand Theatre Leeds. That business of does he recognise her because she's only got a kind of hoodie thing on, the fact that Ankerström doesn't recognise his wife can sometimes stretch credibility. Did the mechanics of that work for you?
I think it worked just fine. I think if we go too far down that particular rabbit hole, we'd never come back out again with opera. I think opera often has to cash in on unnamed invisibility cloaks and all sorts of other techniques of that sort. So I think there are all sorts of things we can't take literally with opera. I think, interestingly, with this piece, what is absolutely sort of realist, perhaps, certainly realistic, is Verdi is really trying to get at the psychology of his characters. He's trying to get at what human emotion might actually be like, in a way that, yes, okay, needs us to believe in hoods that can't be seen through and cloaks that can't be recognised. But it's the music that's telling us something very true, I think, about these characters in a way that was really quite radical in 1859 when this piece was first performed.
We'll talk more about the kind of psychological subtlety of his writing in the duets in this opera in just a moment, Flora. But when I asked the conductor, Richard Farnes, we spoke about how Ballo in Maschera is an opera in which there are two completely different worlds of music.
I think that's a very important part of the opera. I think the nature of the king is bipolar, and that's musically as well. The way he relates with Oscar and the music that surrounds Oscar is always sort of uplifted. It's somebody who goes to these extraordinary heights. In the first act, the king is determined to have fun at the cave of Ulrika, this idea, the excitement of going disguised as somebody else and really finding out whether this woman is a serious threat to the state or she's just somebody who lives in a cave and makes predictions. And that sort of jocular nature, and then underneath that, of course, his confidant and best friend, Ankerström, is constantly warning about the threat from possible conspirators amongst his own people and so on. And then he slips down into these very depressive moods. So he just jumps from one to the other. And Verdi illustrates this musically. I mean, in the middle of Ulrika's scene, the second scene of the first act, there are places where Ulrika is singing to Amelia, and yet you get these little bum 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 bum, which literally just tells you that the king, in his high spirits, disguised, listening in on the conversation, is there. It's like the music just says, I'm still here, and I'm just watching what's going on. So I think the music very much reflects that bipolar nature, and that's what makes the piece so extraordinary, I think.
The conductor, Richard Farnes. Flora, Richard Farnes talking there about the contrasting types of music Verdi gives us in Ballo in Masquerade. Do you think that musical contrast, that bipolar aspect, as you put it, is matched by what we see in this Tim Albury production?
Yeah, I think to some extent. I mean, what's really good here is the use of lighting, I think. So in the first scene of Act One, it's all very light. It's that Nordic cold white lights that we've got. Then in Ulrika's scene, and actually continuing into Act Two, it's pretty much the same set. The lights go very, very dark. We're plunged into this sort of deep red light. There's a real play of light and dark contrast here, which is absolutely crucial to Verdi's music for this opera, that he's pulling together comic and tragic elements and also generic mixing. He's really playing with different kinds of music that he can use. He wanted variety. And that is something that absolutely leaks from this opera. I mean, I think it's something that really drives it along, in fact, this constant play of contrasts, that for every dark moment, there's a sudden injection of comic lightness.
We were left, the very last image we had there was a really nasty one, with Ankerström forcing Amelia down into a chair, pulling her head back and suddenly finding an interrogator's torch to shine in her face. And we know that there's going to be an ugly scene, and that is indeed what begins the final act. We have this extraordinary, powerful scene between husband and wife, with just the sort of... I mean, we had subtlety in the duet between the king and Amelia, but here you really sense the agonies these people are going through.
Absolutely. It's incredibly moving music. And actually, I think we do hear something of that in what we've just heard as well. I mean, it struck me in this particular performance that there's something tremendously ironic about the fact that we've just heard Ankerström and Amelia singing simultaneously, but categorically not together. They are singing with the conspirators behind them in that final scene, and it's horribly moving the way that they're absolutely at odds with each other, and that's very, very clear musically as well, and that's going to be what really propels Act Three from its beginning, this idea of being emotionally poles apart and seeking some kind of middle ground.
Well, by the time Ankerström allows Amelia to go and say goodbye to their son, as she's asked, in the aria Eri Tu, he rants and rages as he thinks how he trusted Amelia. But by the end of it, his view of things has shifted significantly. He now has come to the view that it's Gustavo's betrayal that deserves to be punished. And then when the two conspirators, Rydding and Horn, turn up, they're sceptical about Ankerström joining them at first. But when he's convinced them he wants the king dead, they can't agree who should fire the fatal shot.
Yes, it really is a sort of the nastiest plot twist that could be, really. And it's probably worth saying that this story is based in historical reality of some kind, but the idea that Ankerström would be so close to the king was an invention of Eugène Scribe, who actually wrote the French libretto that Verdi then adapted for his opera. And I think it was a really important addition, actually, to that plot, to make the tenor and the baritone such close allies, and to then have the woman coming between them, which is a real sort of twist on your standard Italian opera love triangle, that in this case it's the two men who are very close, and it's that relationship, apart from anything else, which is then horribly sort of mutated out of all recognisability in this opera, and to such tragic effect.
Well, now Oscar turns up with an invitation to the ball, and the conspirators agree they'll all go and all wear scarlet. It'll be a dance of death. The next scene brings us at last to the masked ball of the title. Well, the way Tim Arbery and the designer Hannah Clark have handled this scene hasn't pleased everybody. They don't give us a glittering ballroom thronged with masked dancers. The ball happens off stage, and they give us an anteroom crammed with sofas where the revelers pause to catch their breath between dances. There aren't any masks, but everyone's got up, rather confusingly, deliberately, of course, in the same shade of red, and they're all wearing high white powdered wigs with whitened faces. More than one critic pronounced themselves baffled. Here's Tim Arbery.
The way that Verdi's written the ball is really quirky, because they make these musical interventions that are loud and raucous, and the longest one is probably 40 seconds, maybe, 45 seconds, the shortest maybe 15 seconds, and there's only three of them. And the rest of the time you're at private conversations between people at the ball, and the whole scene itself is very, very short. So in a way it's quite ironic that the title is The Masked Ball, but actually it's the most condensed, short ball you've ever been to. And as I say, the choral parts of it are tiny, but they're like these sort of, again, very manic screams of kind of, let's just have fun. Life is an illusion or a fleeting dream. Let's party on. Which is sort of what the king has been trying to do throughout the evening to escape life. And of course, at the end, you can't escape life and fate catches you and you die. And in a sense, then the message is the same for everybody. We can all pretend that life can just be a big party, but living for the day and having fun doesn't sometimes work out.
The director, Tim Arbery. Flora, what do you make of the ball scene?
I actually really enjoyed this. I think the ball scene can be a real problem, not least because if you do stage it with actual masks on, for instance, masks aren't terribly good at hiding who is who. This is the first time I've ever actually seen the ball scene where it's genuinely difficult to know which character is which, and that does actually add to its effectiveness. It adds to the dramatic tension. I also loved the fact that the stage space is so cramped here with all those sofas, as you say, and with the chorus sort of pouring on and off the stage very, very quickly in this very compressed way. And I think that's actually really important. You get this sense of the private drama of the lovers, of also of the conspirators trying to get to the king. That's playing out in this public space as the chorus sort of, yes, pour on and off. And this sort of staging of the opera, of the scene, works really nicely in bringing that out, I think.
Well, King Gustavo is sung in this Opera North production by Rafael Rojas. He told me about the practicalities of dying on stage.
I have to die on stage in a very dramatic fashion in front of all the people in the party. Plus, I have to sing for quite a while after I've been stabbed. I need all the help I can have from the music director and from Tim Arbery, the director, so it doesn't go too exaggerated or too low. You have to try to take a very sort of a middle ground. All the decisions we have to make are in order to make it more real, more believable, more people that can relate to every single movement, every single gesture.
It is a really tricky thing to bring off, that lingering death thing happens in quite a lot of operas, and I think it works here really well.
Yes, I think it does. I mean, it's interesting to realise that actually as part of this opera's rather difficult journey to its premiere, at one point the censor decreed that Gustavo had to die off stage. And I mean, I think actually this production is a good argument for doing it on stage. It can be done. It can be done effectively. And actually it's quite important for us to see that. It is the final denouement. It's also interesting that really right from this middle point in Verdi's career, he had this extremely strong sense that once your main character is dead, you really do need to bring the curtain down. It's a very fast tumble into the end of the opera. He had that unfailing sort of sense of the man of the theatre was right there, even in 1859.
Flora Wilson, thank you very much indeed. Well, the last act of Un ballo in maschera begins with the furious Ankerström ranting at his wife. Her guilty tears mean nothing, he says. All pleas are in vain. She will die, he tells her. Coming into the pit here in the Grand Theatre Leeds to conduct the last act of Ballo in Maschera is Richard Farnes.
Oh, io a te concedo riveder nell'ombra e nel silenzio là, il tuo rossore lonta via nascondi.
Breathe.
Os pies se rende ansiado. Come dici? Non chieder di più.
Non è dubbio, il feroce di Filippo mi vuole
Gustavo vi sarà.
Certo.
O sorte, tanto è mito so che valga.
E un ballo in maschera splendidissimo.
Benissimo. E la me coi perderà.
Sì.
E noi forse da quell'arco più sveglito il colpo.
Sono
mia, se il vincere
Grazie. mia vita attenterà, sta detto, ma se m'arresto, chi ha pavento dirà? Non va, nessuno può sospettarlo me, tu va, resta, verrà, perciò il me con la festa. Sì, rinader di aveglia, ancora volta l'aria, l'amore mi brillerà,
e mentre si redorme tu scivoli alla festa.
Essere qui.
Che? Come?
L'ho detto.
Ebbene, qual è?
Non ve dirò.
Gran cosa.
Cercatelo da voi.
Orsù.
E per far ritiro che regalasti a me.
Fia, calmati. Almen dirmi del suo costume puoi.
Saper vorresteti.
Thank you.
confidenza che in quanti burti so.
Mi prego assai.
Peggio di grave cose adesso, via che la notte inoltre, qui sfavellar su che farò cadere la colpa, se non mi sia concesso.
Dunque?
Fai grazie a lui se parli, oh! E non a me.
Veste un giubbotto nero, suavito viola.
Una parola ancora.
C'è una stanza,
e vado a morire, se chiederete di ci stanze.
Sì, quella dello spritto.
La morte che v'accerchia.
Non penetra nel mio palpito rosa.
Fuggite, fuggite, oh, questo fitto cadete qui.
Rivelami il nome tuo.
Io non posso.
E perché pianti, mi subriti atterrita, onde con tanta senti pietà della mia vita. In van ti celi a meia, quell'angelo tu sei.
Cielo si fa con gli anni, a piedi tuoi materno, ave panenco della veneta e ferro, cadavere domani.
Forgiving his assassin, his closest friend, Ankerström, King Gustavo tells him that, yes, he loves Ankerström's wife, Amelia, but he respected her honour and hands him a document he signed sending him abroad with Amelia. With his last breath bidding farewell to his beloved country, Gustavo forgives everyone. That's the end of Verdi's opera, Un ballo in maschera, in this new production for Opera North by Tim Albury. Applause for the chorus of Opera North, joined on stage by chorus master Oliver Rundell. And now Amelia's servant, Stuart Lang, Chief Justice Ivan Sharp, and Christian Richard Mosley Evans. The chief conspirators, Count Riving, Dean Robinson, and Count Horn, John Savornin. Oscar, Gustavus Page, Teresa Gevorgian, she's going to be singing the role of Oscar for Grange Park Opera, and Lisette in La Rondine for Opera Holland Park. The fortune teller, Ulrika, sung by Patricia Barden. She has a lot of handle in prospect. The man who did the deed, Ankerström, Philip Rhodes, a regular at Opera North over the last few years. And Amelia, Adrienne Nitsch. She'll be singing Gutsrune in Wagner's Götterdämmerung in the stunning Hungarian State Opera in Budapest. and Gustavo, sung by the Mexican tenor Rafael Rojas, who studied at the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama and the Royal Northern College. His next opera engagement is as Radamaz in Verdi's Aida at the Staatsoper Hanover. A vision of, I guess, a kind of plum colour, which is the colour for all those at the masked ball, spattered with a little black. And now the cast joined on stage by conductor Richard Farnes, acknowledging the applause for the Orchestra of Opera North leader David Greed. Richard Farnes, music director of Opera North from 2004 to 2016. This is his first return to the company since he left in a real blaze of glory with a series of utterly amazing concert performances of Wagner's Ring Cycle, which you may remember Radio 3 broadcast live from Sage Gateshead. The project won the 2017 Royal Philharmonic Society Opera and Music Theatre Award. Well, that's brought us to the end of our Opera North evening here in the Grand Theatre Leeds. I'll hand you on now for the rest of the Radio 3 evening.
Thank you, Donald MacLeod. And that Opera North performance of Verdi's Un ballo in maschera was recorded at Leeds Grand Theatre in February. Next week, Opera on 3 brings you front row seats at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden for a work of even darker terrain. Shostakovich's Lady Macbeth of Minsk, conducted by Sir Antonio Pappano and with Eva Maria Westbrook in the title role.